Welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Bank, where we show you how to think like a bank by applying the same strategies and principles that banks use to help you find more financial freedom in your life. I'm your host, Sarah Ibrahim. With us today, I have Carl Fisher. Carl graduated from Cornell University and is a third-generation real estate developer. Carl began his investing career in the 1970s when he was employed as a rocket scientist at Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Carl is one of the founders and principals at CAMA, Self-Directed IRA, LLC, DBA, CAMA Plan, founded in 2004. CAMA Plan is a national company located in Ambler, Pennsylvania. Carl has implemented plans and managed millions of dollars in real estate transactions. His real estate investments include commercial and residential properties, including real property, notes, and mortgages. He's been able to increase his net worth using self-directed tools such as self-directed IRAs. This has led to tax-free income as well as tax-free profits from real estate deals and private placements. In addition to his hands-on experience, he has spoken to many groups, including real estate investors, brokers, CPAs, financial advisors, attorneys, and mortgage professionals about the power and possibilities of IRAs, 401ks, and qualified self-directed plans. He provides continuing education credits for both nationally and state-specific attorneys, accountants, realtors, and appraisers. Hey, Carl, welcome to our podcast.
Thanks, Sarah. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. As we talked about before we were recording, I think what you do is relevant to our clients as well as our listeners who listen to this podcast, especially when it comes to investing in real estate on a tax-favored basis. Before we jump into that, do you mind sharing more about your background and who you are?
Sure. I can go all the way back to the beginning where I was born in New Jersey. My mom and dad moved to Fort Lauderdale, Florida when I was 2 years old. I'm the oldest of 12 kids. My mom and dad were in real estate, and their moms and dads were in real estate. And I'm in real estate, and my kids are in real estate. So we've got like four generations in the real estate world. When I graduated college in New York, Cornell University, I came back to Florida at Cape Canaveral and Kennedy Space Center and worked on the shuttle and Titan rocket launches. I did that until the mid-90s. And at that point, we were moving away from manned spaceflight and thinking about giving it to the Russians, which we did a few years later. And I didn't want to be any part of that. Mm-hmm. So then I got into financial positions and started a self-directed IRA company with my sister because we learned that we could buy real estate and have tax-free income for life. And I thought it sounded too good to be true. I researched it, you know, with attorneys, accountants, financial advisors, and they all steered me away from it, but it just intrigued me because I borrowed money from an IRA when my dad died because he died land rich and cash poor. And I said, I know it works. I even called the IRS to get information on it. So that piqued my curiosity. Mm-hmm. And I said, why should I be working, you know, for a, you know, 3 or 6% match to my salary in my IRA and 401k when this guy was making 12 to 18% just lending it out. And he told me there's a lot more borrowers than there are lenders, so he's not worried about it. And then he also said, you know, he wants to foreclose because he makes more money on when he forecloses, as long as he doesn't overextend himself with the loan. So I looked at it and I said, well, that's brilliant. And from that point on, I said, yeah, this was what I was thinking about earlier about being the bank, which I know corresponds to your type of philosophy. So that's how we started the business. I come from a large family, had a pretty big circle of people, and I was helping them with their IRAs and 401ks. And finally, they convinced me to open my own business.
Okay, this is interesting. So I want to dive deeper. So you mentioned instead of having like a 3 to 6% match from a 401k, like many Americans do, like that's a very common thing to do. It's not very lucrative, but it's very common.
You can
that's better than nothing.
Yeah, it's better than nothing. Yeah. And then you can loan that money out to, you know, 12 to 18%. Can you elaborate more on what you mean by that?
Sure. I'll give you the true story, right? Mm-hmm. My dad died. He was land rich, cash poor, and he had a loan that nobody knew about until the attorney called and he says his loan's been in default for a year and it's at 28% interest. You know, and you owe, I think, $150,000. I don't remember the exact number. Mm-hmm. I said, well, we never heard about this. And he says, well, they're getting ready to foreclose on it. And I said, well, the property's worth a lot more than that. So I went out and I, you know, this was back in the mid-90s. And I went to the newspapers. You could find money to lend in the newspaper section in the classifieds. It was, you know, just when the internet was starting. And I called him up and he said, yeah, I'll have the money to you in 3 days. I do my own inspection, et cetera, and I'm going to give it to you at 12%. Mm-hmm. And I said, all right. So I'm taking it from 28 to 12%. Mm-hmm. I got him the loan, gave him the money. You know, basically my dad's estate wasn't settled, but I was able to get a loan, you know, putting up collateral for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 9 months later, I had everything squared away. And I said, look, if you lower the rate to 7%, I'll let you keep the loan. He says, no, my lowest rate is 12%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I told you, it's 12 to 18. And I said, I know, but now you know me, you know, I'm not going to miss any payments. Mm-hmm. He goes, yeah, but I don't care about that. I'll leave it at 12. And I said, well, you know, what happens if the next borrower you lend money to, you have to foreclose on? And I said, yeah, that's what I asked him. He says, well, quite frankly, I was hoping to foreclose on you. Just think about it and see how much money would I make. And so that actually changed my paradigm shift, you know? Yeah. And I, you know, I went back, I think I got that surprised look on my face. I didn't even feel like I should be in the same room talking to this guy. You know, I was ready to take a class from him. And then I started searching out how to do loans with your IRA. Found out you can buy real estate with them. You can buy precious metals. You can do it with Roth IRAs, traditional IRAs, SEP IRAs, mm-hmm. simple 401ks, solos, and the others, mm-hmm. et cetera. So I started doing that. I said, you know, I can make more money doing this than working. Mm-hmm. And it's not that much fun, you know, launching rockets anymore since we're getting away from manned spaceflight. So I delved into self-directed IRAs and started Camo Plan, 6 or 7 years later after I learned the ropes.
Mm-hmm. And just so the listeners know, a self-directed IRA, typically an IRA, people hold like stocks, bonds, mutual funds, like either through like one of the big companies like TD Ameritrade, Fidelity. The alternative is.
Yeah. So basically we allow people to invest in what I call alternatives, you know, precious mm-hmm. metals, real estate, notes, you know, pretty much anything that they want. We've had some people use llamas. So, you know, it's pretty mm-hmm. wide open to whatever it is, partnerships, LLCs, you know, different entities, closely held REITs. So it just gives you a bigger menu to pick from. And, you know, we don't, with us, you do have to find them. We don't mm-hmm. have loans off to the side. We don't sell any real estate. Uh-huh. But, you know, when we say self-directed, it's for, you know, you self-directed. You may buy the house down the street from you yeah. or the building in town or some land out in the country, all of it for investment purposes, but it's a good way to diversify your portfolio because you know, I think everybody's figured out when the market's going up, everything mm-hmm. goes up, right? It floats all boats. Mm-hmm. And so you get this diversification.
Got it. And the general, I guess there's a lot of rule, like tax rules and laws when it comes to IRAs, but I guess the general rule is, it has to be passive. Like you can't, for example, own an active business and then have that sitting in an IRA. It has to kind of be separate from you. Somebody else is managing it. Somebody else, like you're not directly involved actively in that business or investment.
You can't get paid for it. And but let me just say that you can run a business out of your IRA, but you will pay taxes, and it's called unrelated business income tax. And your IRA can also borrow money if it's buying real estate, you know, as a non-recourse loan. So if you are doing non-recourse loans, there's a possibility you will have to pay what's called unrelated debt financed income. And if you're running a non-passive business, you're probably going to have to pay if you're getting earned income, if your IRA is getting earned income from it. You're going to have to pay UBIT tax.
Okay. And then the reason why UBIT exists. So UBIT is like, for example, if I have rental income inside of an IRA, technically speaking, there's no taxes inside of the IRA. It grows tax deferred inside of it. But when I'm using that money with leverage being involved, it opens the door for UBIT, unrelated business income tax.
Correct. 100%. Now it's either tax deferred or tax free, depending on whether you have a traditional or a Roth IRA or 401k. And obviously I'm a big proponent of tax free.
Yeah.
I believe in paying your taxes up front if it's at all possible.
Yeah.
And then having all the earnings tax free.
Yeah, definitely. And I've heard from a lot of people that in the financial community that typically when it comes to IRAs, you can't leverage an IRA but however, I have seen, like I've Googled before, like IRA loans for real estate, and there are some providers that do so. So this would be like, to give like a brief example or a basic example, you have an IRA, you have one real estate property. That property, let's just say the market value of it is $100,000. You would get a loan against the property, right? Even though it's correct, inside of an IRA.
The IRA will own it.
Okay.
Right. And then the IRA will get the loan, right? Let's say, you know, let's just say it's 50-50. So the IRA will put $50,000 into it, and the bank will loan $50,000, right? And your IRA, the only thing they're going to take, right, if they have a judgment against you, or if you stop paying, they can take the property, but they can't come back after you personally or back for any money that's in the IRA. So if you had another $50,000 in the IRA, it wouldn't be available to them. They would take the house and that's all they get.
And that's what non-recourse means, right?
Yep, that's what non-recourse means. So it's a good, in my opinion, it's a good deal. You know, it depends on your rate of return and how fast you need it. But some people say, should I buy, you know, one house for $90,000 if I have $90,000, or should I buy three of them for $30,000 and finance the, you know, the rest of them? And you got to look at it and kind of see what your rate of return is going to be. You know, when you leverage property, just like when you buy real estate, you know, outright, you know, I buy a lot of real estate using other people's money, especially if the rates are low. And I also use it as an asset protection, right? So if I can keep things financed, you know, high, it takes a little bit of the the risk out of it.
That makes sense. So in other words, when you have a real estate property that you own, and somebody sues you and you have a lot of equity in the property, that equity could be exposed. But when you don't have a lot of equity, in other words, it's leveraged, there's a lot of leverage.
They don't want the house.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. They don't want the house with the big mortgage.
Yeah, exactly. Plus the bank has a lien on it. So the bank is also going to want to protect their property, their assets that they have.
Sure.
So back to UBIT. So is a Roth IRA also exposed to, or could be exposed to UBIT?
It could be. Yeah. But a lot of times when you're using leverage, if you use a 401k or a solo 401k, UBIT from a debt financing is waived. You know, there's an exception for that. So if you are going to use debt, I say use an IRA, a 401k over an IRA if you have that option. And people always ask me, well, should I have a 401k or an IRA or an educational savings account or a health savings account? And my answer is yes, as many of those as you can, because you can actually put them together and, you know, in an LLC or just have them buy the same piece of property if you so chose to, right? Mm-hmm. It would just be tenants in common.
That makes sense. As far as using getting the loans, like how we mentioned in the example, like 50-50, with the IRA getting having half the leverage with the bank, are the interest rates typically higher on those types of loans as opposed to just personally guaranteeing a property?
They are not. They're higher than home mortgage loans. They're not. You know, when you're buying investment property, the rates are definitely higher than.
Yeah.
You're buying your primary residence, mm-hmm. or even a second home like that. I think the rates right now are like 5.5%. And you can get, you know, 30 year fixed, 15 years, 20 years. You can get, you know, 1, 3, and 5 year ARMs. So you just have to kind of look. And, you know, it's like the banks, and I've seen them request 25% down as a minimum, and mm-hmm. I've seen them go all the way up to 40% down, you know, as a down payment. So you're only going to leverage 60%. But I've seen that in the regular time, even when I'm signing on too, you know.
Okay. Now, when it comes, like for example, if somebody did a 30-year fixed and they were paying monthly payments, the mortgage, would the IRA pay? Like the IRA is the payer of the mortgage.
Okay. Yep.
And then what if
so the rent comes in,
okay,
and the payment goes out, and obviously they're gonna look at what your debt to income ratio is for that property, and they're gonna make sure that you're 30% above that, so that it's, you know, you're not gonna get in a problem. But if you're not above that, then it's probably not a property worth buying if you're putting down, you know, 30%. If you don't have a cash flow, you know, in excess of what your payments are.
So if the rental income cannot meet those mortgage payments for whatever reason, then you would have to fund the IRA with cash. So that way the IRA could pay, or you could just.
You can make a contribution every year to the IRA. You can transfer money from another IRA.
Okay.
To it, or your IRA can go out and take a loan. So there's several ways to do that, or you can sell part of it too. So, you know, there's all kinds of strategies. Just like if, you know, if you had a piece of property and you lost your job and were strapped for it, you know, it'd be hard to get a loan, but you might get a loan from somebody with an IRA, like mm-hmm. I did, mm-hmm. paying a higher percentage, you know, mm-hmm. until you got your job back, and then you'd refinance.
Okay. Now, when it comes to lending, like, a lot of the guests on this podcast are private money lenders. They've done, and I've had one guest on here say that he uses his IRA to be the lender. So, like, for example, let's just use even numbers.
He has one of my favorite strategies.
Yeah. And with that, there's no UBIT at all, right?
Because now you're lending the money and all you're getting is interest. So why would you put the money in a bank and make a 10th of a percent interest?
Yeah.
You know, when you can lend it out at, you know, 8, 10, 12% and maybe a couple of points.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So this is in this case, so the audience knows, you have the cash in a IRA, a self-directed IRA, and then you're loaning it out to other real estate investors or business owners, charging them interest. And then the interest and payments, the principal interest payments, go back into your IRA, increasing the cash. Is that correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And if it's a Roth IRA, it's all tax-free. And if you're 59 and a half, it's real easy to take that money out and spend it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, basically you're getting rid of the taxes by having it go back into the IRA, and then mm-hmm. you take the distribution. So it's one of the greatest things that's out there. And then other people say, oh, but I'm so young, I don't want to wait till you're 59 and a half to take it out. Well, come see us and we'll show you ways to get it out earlier without.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I know with the Roth, you can technically take the money out under the age of 59 and a half without taxes until your cost basis. So if you put cash, let's just say $6,000 into a Roth, it grows.
Contribution. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Up to the contrary.
Yeah, you're smart. You're good on this, Sarah.
I have to be for my clients.
Yeah, no, you're good.
So in other words, so if somebody's in a situation where they have to take money out and they could be facing a penalty, there are some things that they could do to mitigate or eliminate those penalties.
Yeah, I mean, especially if people get to the point and say, "Hey, I've got enough. I'm done."
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you remember hearing Peter Thiel's, you know, $1 billion Roth IRA. You know, almost a year ago when they were going to make all the IRS changes. Yeah. And then, you know, Mitt Romney did it, I don't know, 8 or 12 years ago when he was running for president, mm-hmm. right? He had a $100 million IRA. Oh, so wow. People do understand that these are good tools. And, you know, whether you got, you know, a few hundred thousand in it or a couple million, to me, I think it's a good thing. And if you're a Mitt Romney, great. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people were saying, well, how come he gets away with that? And they're actually calling us up and saying, we want one of those Mitt mm-hmm. Romney IRAs. And I said, I can give you the IRA, but you got to find the investments. Mm-hmm. You know, so
you can't make any investment recommendations or connections to other investments?
I do not. No, we leave that up to financial advisors like yourself. We basically just do the bookkeeping so that it's there. We're a neutral third party. It's mm-hmm. just too hard. You know, people say, what do you think about this property mm-hmm. on the beach in La Jolla? Mm-hmm. What do you think about this one in Chicago, you know, in downtown city, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, where do you think about this one in Florida or the Jersey Shore or mm-hmm. Texas? And there's just no way we're going to be responsible, you know, with the valuations. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and I have properties in those states, but, you know, in real estate, it's neighborhood by neighborhood mm-hmm. or street by street in most places. You know, get with your real estate agent in that area, ask them that information, you know, get with your financial advisor. They'll help you figure it out, you know, and like you said, you're always going to help your client no matter what, you mm-hmm. know, even if it means business is going away from you. You know? Mm-hmm. So, and by the way, I commend that we have the same thought process.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. So about leverage again. So this is actually like something I'm really interested in.
Cool.
Is when it comes to an IRA and leverage, being able to borrow, is it only relevant to real estate? In other words, is real estate the only way you can leverage within an IRA, or could you leverage for other assets, like other non-real estate assets?
You can leverage for non-real estate assets. You just don't want to have what they call prohibited transactions, right? Which, you know, you couldn't really have a life insurance policy as an example that the IRA would own, or mm-hmm. collectibles, you know, things like that. But could you put a car up? You bet. Could you put a, what other things have we said? Oh, notes.
Yeah.
Some people will leverage notes. Hey, I've got this note for, you know, $300,000 on this house worth $600,000 in first position. You know, will you loan me, you know, 90% of the 300 on it that I have on the note, you know, or 80% or something like that. So yeah, there's all kinds of different ways to leverage.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's a big deal too, right? Especially when you consider all types of taxes, either dividends, you know, short-term capital gains, or even ordinary income from investments that you produce, having it going back into an IRA or a Roth IRA, it makes a big difference on your tax returns, especially like how some people already make a lot of money, like they already have high paying W-2 jobs. So by this extra income that they're making, it's just going to boost them up the marginal tax brackets, and they have to end up paying more money. So the Roth, traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs can help mitigate that while still increasing your net worth, because right, the IRA is on your balance sheet as far as your net worth, same with the assets within the IRAs. So this helps you increase your net worth while also mitigating your taxes every year.
And I'll take that one step further. If you're already in the highest tax bracket, which a lot of your clients are, then maybe you should be doing some of your business in the IRA, because let's say you're making $100,000 and you're in the 40% tax bracket, right? So now have your Roth IRA do that and it'll pay 40%, but now your Roth IRA has an extra $60,000 in it. And if it buys a piece of real estate worth $600,000, and it's getting that rent, then all of that's tax-free. But if it's still got the business, so what? You're paying it either personally or into a tax advantage plan. And most tax advantage plans, again, work on the, and I know you're big on this too, is asset protection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you've got money in a 401k, you know, like O.J. Simpson, right? Nobody got that money based on the lawsuits, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's another reason to do some of that stuff.
Yeah, and Florida is probably arguably the best state when it comes to asset protection for cash value life insurance, annuities, IRAs, 401ks. I think it depends on the state.
Primary residences.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Primary residences, yeah. I think the only rule is you have to live in it for like 40 months consecutively or something along those lines. You have to live in the house for X amount of period.
Yeah, homestead. You got to live in it more than half the year.
Okay. So, Carl, what else? So we talked about IRAs, Roth IRAs, UBIT. We talked about leverage. We talked about private money lending. You could use this technically. You can also use IRAs and Roth IRAs for private equity positions, right? Like if somebody, you know, you're a passive investor, you can use your IRA to invest passively in those deals. You could still be exposed to the UBIT part, right? Because those private equity firms and syndications are using leverage. So that could give you UBIT that way, or you could be exposed to UBIT that way.
Yep, exactly. But, you know, you can also invest in different investments that will give you depreciation, you know, 100% depreciation or 90% depreciation back, where you can offset some of those taxes as well, you know, that your IRA can take. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of strategies. You just have to figure out what investments you're going to be in, what kind of taxes you're going to pay, and then what's the best plan for it. And then once you have that plan, then you're just going to go out and, you know, rinse and repeat, you know, each time and just keep doing it. And you know what you're taxes are going to be, at least for this year. You know, that is another thing I'm saying is I think people should definitely think about converting to Roth IRAs. There's a great book. There's a great book out there by Joe Luby that has called Keep It, which gives some strategies on how to convert to a Roth and save money on it. You know, instead of converting cash, maybe convert a house that's lost value.
Okay, that makes sense.
Or like stocks that have lost value, right?
So what that means is, let's just say I have $100,000 in a traditional IRA, and then I convert that year into a Roth IRA. What happens is, as far as a tax concern, I get like $100,000 added to my ordinary income, right? It's as if I made $100,000 that year because of that conversion. But if you're converting it into like depreciating assets or assets that are like lost value on paper, it can kind of offset some of those taxes or lower some of those taxes.
Oh, yeah. Let's say you bought a house, you know, and this is a true example, right? In 2008, and it lost, you know, you bought it for $100,000 and it lost $30,000, right? Down to $70,000 or $60,000. Now you convert that in 2008 at $60,000. That's the value everybody tells you it's worth.
Yeah.
And then you're paying tax on $60,000, and it gets back up to $100,000 or $120,000 where it is today.
Yeah,
it's all tax free.
Okay, that's smart. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, so I mean, it's the same deal. When stocks go way down,
yeah,
you know, sell them or you know, convert them at that point.
That makes sense. Okay,
you know, and then you know, a lot of realtors converted their IRAs, you know, back in 2008-09 because they weren't making any money because no properties were moved.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, another thing too is if you are going to convert from IRA to Roth IRA, you'd want to do that probably in the year where you have very little income or even losses from your self-employed businesses.
Sure.
Yeah. I've seen that strategy done where people wait, but when they're in a situation where they're not making money, that's when they do all the conversion and everything because they're already kind of at a tax loss that year.
Yeah, sure. If you're a professor at a university and you take a sabbatical, that's a great time, right? Mm-hmm. If you're not getting paid, if you're retiring from a job, that's a perfect time to think about converting to the Roth because that next year, you know, you're probably traveling and doing some fun things that's costing you money.
Yeah,
and you're not bringing in any earned income.
Yeah, definitely. So, Carl, so just to kind of recap, what you guys do is you guys help people structure self-directed, create self-directed IRAs, either traditional or Roth IRAs. What else do you guys do?
Well, we have an academy that we teach people different strategies and show them different investments, because we think that educated investors are way better for our company than uneducated investors. If we can get an educated investor, then they're going to make money. I can't stand people who said, "Well, my husband's roommate told me to get this," right? And then they get divorced, and the roommate can't be found, and everything's a mess, you know. So we try to educate people, you know, how different people will buy real estate, what's happening in the market. As an example, I was talking to a couple people the other day, and you know, coming up maybe in the next year or two, because we're all always looking forward, you might be the time to buy subject to properties, right? So if your IRA goes out and buys a loan, right, and takes it subject to the mortgage, it's not against the IRA, and you basically are picking it up for payments. So, you know, that's another strategy, and we just talk about those types of ways to do things, and wholesaling and selling a contract. You know, so there's a lot of different strategies that smart investors like, and obviously, I go all over the country speaking, and I talk to accounting groups, real estate groups, attorneys, and teach them the ins and outs. You know how big the IRS code is, and how long it'll fill. You know, I know about that much of it, and I'm very good at it, you know, in the IRA 401k world. So a lot of people turn to us to figure out how exactly they can make the most out of their IRAs and turn it into a Mitt Romney or a Peter Thiel, you know, $1 billion IRA. Because think about it. If he had made that $1 billion on his own, he would have been paying, you know, $400 million in taxes.
Yeah, exactly. It would have exposed even other taxes, like even more beyond that. Like, it would have opened the doors for other taxes even. That definitely makes sense. Carl, how can people connect with you and learn more about you?
They should go to our website, camaplan.com, CAMAPLAN.com. At that website, they can get our phone number, our address. They can go to the CAMA Academy or Resource Center and look at all of the classes and podcasts and webinars we have. And, you know, with your permission, we'll put this one up there as well. And then they can schedule an appointment with an account executive, or they can just call in and start asking their questions. But, you know, our website is an award-winning website, and people like it, and they learn a lot. And you can sit there in your pajamas and read at your own pace, and just write your questions down, and we'll be glad to help you with
it. Okay, sounds good, Carl. It was a pleasure. I'll put the link you mentioned in the show notes below, so that way listeners can connect with you and learn more about what you guys are doing. It was a pleasure having you on the podcast, and I'm looking forward to having you back on.
Thanks, Harry. I really appreciate it. It was great listening to you, and keep up the good work with your clients on thinking like a bank, because I think it lowers risks and increases profits. So congrats.
Thank you. To learn more about what we do and how we can help you grow more wealth, please visit www.finassetprotection.com. That's F-I-N assetprotection.com. The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.